Amen. So we're actually genuinely this morning finishing our teaching series on Because He's Worth It. It's all about worship. We keep saying it's the last week. It actually is the last week this week, I promise you. Last week I wasn't here, and the reason is I was doing the Great South Run last week. It was brilliant with my good friend Kane. Is Kane here this morning? Hey, mate. Yeah, here we are. I didn't ask his permission. That's us at the end. We had a brilliant day, didn't we? Fantastic. It was a great atmosphere. I finished ahead of him by 17 seconds. And some people might point out that a week earlier, Kane was in hospital with an infection, and it was absolutely heroic for him even to finish. But the fact is, the truth is, I finished 17 seconds ahead of him, and I think we just need to stick to that. It's an eternity over 10 miles. It really is. So that was extra special for me. Well done, Kane, though. No, genuinely, he did better than me. It was great fun, but in many ways, the race, it's a bit like how our culture does everything at the moment. You move as fast as you can towards the end. You work hard, you achieve your goals. The tagline of the run, and it was on everything, was be your greatest. Be your greatest. And we're pushed all the time to be our greatest, to strive, hit the finishing line, whatever that is, the day you die, the day you retire, paying off your mortgage. I've no idea what we're rushing for, but apparently we need to work hard all the time to get more money and be more comfortable and prove ourselves to be capable, and it's good for the economy or something. I've no idea, but apparently that's what we're supposed to do. That's what our culture says. And the thing that nobody talks about, it seems, is rest. Nobody talks about rest. We have loads of technology that was designed to make our lives easier. People said, oh, the work week will get cut down. We won't have to work as well. People actually used to say that. It's really funny, isn't it? The work week will get cut down. It's actually now longer. And we have devices that mean people can contact you 24/7. You can work 24/7. People can get hold of you anytime. You can work anywhere. Isn't that wonderful? No. No, actually, no, it isn't. And so we don't talk about rest. And I want to talk about rest today, and deliberately so, to finish the worship series, because I think resting well is the great forgotten act of worship. Resting well is the great forgotten act of worship. In the Bible, they use this word Shabbat. I meant to write one of these as Shabbat. I've just written Sabbath twice on the screen. Not that useful. We translate it as Sabbath. Shabbat is Sabbath. And it's often thought of as a day of rest. It's literally, it means ceasing from work, not doing any work. It's a massive deal in the Bible. Anybody else excited about this concept of not working? Yes, that is an easy sell, isn't it? A day when we desist from work. And the whole thing begins right at the start of the Old Testament in the book of Genesis. And you may know, Genesis starts with this big story about creation, and there's loads of debate, is Genesis poetic or literal or something else? And that's really interesting, but we're not doing that today. I'm not interested in that today. You see, Genesis 1 tells the story of God making the world over 6 days, and then Genesis 2 begins with something unusual, which is that God has a rest. Here it is. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing, so on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, he rested from all of the work of creating that he had done. And this is remarkable, because the way that God is spoken of in the Bible, he doesn't need a rest. He doesn't need one. He's not a bit done in by creating the universe. That's not a thing. He doesn't need to have a nap, because he just finished the tectonic plates. Little bit weary. No. God is absolutely 100% full of energy and power all of the time, unceasingly. And yet he stops. He ceases working. He doesn't become less powerful or less creative. He just stops and enjoys what he's done. And it uses this word holy, which is a very Christian jargon word. And it basically means set apart. So the seventh day is set apart by God right at the start of the Bible. And in the next Old Testament book, Exodus, the Sabbath appears again. And this is hundreds of years later, but it is still really, really important to God. And you may or may not know this. The Sabbath, having a seventh day off, is one of the Ten Commandments. It's one of the Ten Commandments. Everyone thinks the Ten Commandments is all about lying and stealing. Those are the two that everybody remembers. But this is in there as well. There's a big emphasis on this Sabbath thing. It's in the top 10. And at this point, God has chosen the people of Israel. He's working with them. He's doing stuff with them. And he says this, one of the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Look at how all-encompassing this is. God says, I don't want you to work, I don't want your kids to work, I don't want your employees to work, I don't want people from other countries who live in your town to work. Heck, I don't even want your animals to work. If anyone here tries to make their pets work on the Sabbath, you've got to stop doing it. It's really unbiblical. Take that hamster out of that wheel. Give him a rest. Give him a rest. But do you see the idea? A lot of the language, it all continues. And the idea is, God rested on the seventh day, so you should too. He creates the pattern, and then we follow it. So this wonderful rhythm of 6 days working and then one off is really old. It's one of the Ten Commandments, but it's a gift from God. It's a great thing. He looked at us and he said, look, you need a day off. You can't do 7 days a week. You need a day off. And what happened right from these Old Testament days is that over the years, all the Jewish religious leaders were really keen to make sure everybody did it really well. Like, oh, we're going to get this wrong. So they put in loads more laws and legislation to help, in inverted commas, people do the Sabbath. And some of them believed that if all the Jewish people kept the Sabbath perfectly once, then the Messiah that the Old Testament talked about, who'd come and sort everything out, would appear. So that was massive. They thought, okay, if we all do it exactly right once, then maybe the Messiah will come. So they got really, really seriously about it. And there were laws and sub-laws and sub-sub-laws with extra clauses, and they would get really upset if anybody that they saw wasn't doing it right. You had to do the Sabbath right. Otherwise, it was blasphemy and you were betraying the faith and everything. And to this day, even to right now, certain very religious Jews get really focused on getting the Sabbath right, and they'll do anything to avoid what they call work. They'll do anything. Let me give you some brilliant examples. In certain Jewish religious circles, they tear their toilet paper before the Sabbath, so that on the Sabbath, they don't have to do the work of tearing it in order to use it. So they, before the Sabbath starts, Friday afternoon, they tear all the toilet paper so they won't have to do any work. Another great one. In some parts of Tel Aviv, where there's loads of massive apartment buildings, they design the elevators so that on the Sabbath, they go up and down every floor and stop at every floor. Why? So that nobody has to do the work of pressing the button on the elevator. You just have to wait and it will come. You don't want to do the work. My favorite one, though, is this. Because it's considered to be writing on the Sabbath, there was relatively recently a massive debate about whether you could play Scrabble on the Sabbath. I kid you not. The resolution of this was to say, because it's writing, if you create a word, the resolution of this was to say, if your Scrabble board has the raised edges and you can separate the letters, then they're not connected, and therefore it's not writing, and therefore you can play Scrabble on the Sabbath. So it's okay if you get the right board. That's how seriously it's taken. And that's how seriously religious Jewish people have always taken the Sabbath. With that in mind, let's have a look at a story in Mark's Gospel, one of the New Testament accounts of Jesus' life, and we see him involved in a Sabbath story. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath?" And he answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" So picture the scene. Jesus is with his disciples. That's his little gang of followers. They're having a nice day off. They're having a walk in the countryside. Nice Sabbath activity. Brilliant. And then the disciples pick some heads of grain. Can you feel the dramatic tension in that moment? You shouldn't, because it's not a big deal. They're just picking up grain. This is not one of those things in the Bible that's supposed to wow you. They're just picking grain. Anyway, that's what happens. They're hungry, they have a snack, Sadly, there isn't a Pret a Manger in first century Galilean countryside, so the grain will do. All going very well so far, but then it all escalates very quickly. The Pharisees notice what's happening. Oh no! And if you don't know about the Pharisees, they're a particular type of Jewish religious leader. They're kind of the equivalent of church leaders, people like me. And they say to Jesus, why are they doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath? Why are they doing that? So let's just pause for a moment. There's two things here. Firstly, it wasn't unlawful to pick grain on the Sabbath. It wasn't. There's nothing in the Bible that says that. It was unlawful according to the extra laws that they developed, supposedly to help you keep the Sabbath. But it's not in the Bible. Second thing, though, what on earth are the Pharisees doing there in the first place? What are they doing there? It's the Sabbath. At this moment, Jesus is not doing any public teaching. He's not healing anybody. He's not claiming to be God or any of the stuff they don't like. He's walking through the countryside with his friends on a day off. Sounds pretty reasonable to me. So the Pharisees are spending their day off following other people to make sure they use their day off properly. They're basically policing other people's rest. Now that seems to me to be a bit much. A little bit much. It's like if you went for a nice walk on the Downs one Saturday afternoon and you turn round and there's me with a clipboard checking that you're not doing any work. That's what I can promise you that will never happen. I am never, ever going to do that. But what an irony. How on earth are they observing the Sabbath themselves if they're going around spending their time on the Sabbath checking that other people are spending the Sabbath properly? That is absolutely ridiculous, is it not? So how does Jesus respond? It's great, actually. In fact, it's genius. He doesn't get into a big debate about all of the laws and all the stuff they've added. He goes straight to something in the Old Testament because he knows that they respect it. And so he discusses with them there. And he pulls out quite an obscure story. And you have to know, the Jewish people absolutely loved David. He was king 1,000 years before. He's a national hero. And so no one's going to criticize David. They respect him. And Jesus recalls a time when David and his friends were on the run for some enemies. And they went into the temple and they ate some bread that was set aside for worship. It was like communion bread, basically. And only the priest was supposed to eat it. But David and his friends were in desperate physical need, so they had it, which was a sensible move. And Jesus uses the example to say, look, yeah, we've got our different rituals and our procedures, but basically human need is supposed to come above those things. And David knew that, and you should follow his example. And it's not a Sabbath example, but it illustrates Jesus' point. All these rituals and procedures in life, they may have their place, but they're not supposed to control us or take priority over humanity. They're supposed to serve us and help us. And that's the same as how we should see the Sabbath. Because it's then that Jesus says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And it might seem like common sense, but it's a revolutionary idea. Here's the thing. A lot of people come along with great intentions to teach things about God and teach religious things, but often they end up with one idea, that God wants things from us, that we have to produce and perform to get it right. And that's basically where the religious teachers of Israel were. And in their way of thinking, the thinking of a lot of religious people, it's as if we were made for the rules. Like the rules are up there and we're made for the rules. And they take priority. And it's that sort of religion, that sort of view of God, that I think puts a lot of people in our culture off exploring Christianity, because they think it's that. And it's a greatly sad thing, because that's the exact opposite of what it is, as we see in what Jesus says. You see, right here, Jesus says, no, the Sabbath thing is not a stick to beat you with, it's a freedom to be enjoyed. It's not that you were made for the Sabbath, it was made for you. It's a gift. The God that Jesus talks about is interested in us thriving, not in performing. We can throw ourselves into a Sabbath and enjoy it without worrying that we're getting it wrong. It's a gift, and it's a great one. And after that, Jesus says this incredible, provocative line. And in fact, this is one of the lines that ends up getting Jesus killed, honestly. And I seem to have missed it out of my slide, but I'll read it to you. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And in this sentence, he's saying three massive things. Firstly, he's saying, I'm the Messiah. The Son of Man was a strange Old Testament for the Messiah we mentioned earlier, and Jesus is using it for himself. All these Jewish leaders, they're stressed about getting the Sabbath right because they want the Messiah to come, and Jesus says, no, relax. it's me. You didn't get the Sabbath right. You're not even close. But I'm here. I'm the one that you've been waiting for. I'm this Messiah guy. Secondly, he says, I'm the Lord. And that's a different claim. It's a bigger one. And in this, Jesus is saying, not only am I the one who's sent by God to sort out the world, I am actually the one who initiated the whole Sabbath thing to begin with. I am the very God who patterned the 6 days of work and one of rest, who told you in the first place that you need to do the same thing. And thirdly, he says, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath in particular. He applies it to that. If he's the Messiah and he's the Lord and he's over everything, remember the context of this, he's defending his disciples from criticism. He's saying, I am the one who originated the Sabbath. It's my thing. So if I say it's okay to do it this way and treat it as a freedom, then it's okay because I've said that it is. It's not a stick to beat people with. It's a gift to be enjoyed. So Jesus blows all this silly criticism about picking grain out of the water completely. He's the one who decided the Sabbath, defines the Sabbath, and defends the Sabbath. All very good. What do we do with this? For those that follow Jesus, the Sabbath is this great gift to be enjoyed. The Bible is not really prescriptive about what we do with the Sabbath. It doesn't say loads. But two things come out quite a lot. Focusing on God in various ways and resting from work. Those are seem to be the two big things that come out. The writer Lynn Barb puts it really well. She says this, whatever we choose to do for Sabbath needs to give us rest and life over time. The challenge is discernment, experimenting to find what works for us and the people we love, what helps us catch our breath and remember who we are as God's beloved. I like that quote. So what does a good or a bad Sabbath look like in practice? Well, we'll all do it differently. In Jewish thinking, the Sabbath is dinner time Friday to dinner time Saturday. It doesn't have to be like that for us. And it's worth noting, the Sabbath concept existed before our modern kind of 40-hour, 9-to-5 work week. Some of us do paid work. Some of us don't at this point in life or in between. When the Bible talks about Sabbath, it doesn't just mean a rest from paid work. It doesn't just mean a rest from paid work. It means a rest from all of the work that we have to steward in life. For example, I am paid by this church to work 5 days a week. I know you think I only work on Sunday, but I actually do 5 days a week. I use a sixth day to do the other work I need to do in life. Shopping, cleaning, life admin, all of that sort of thing. And then I have a seventh day, which is my Sabbath. That's my rhythm. How you use it is up to you. And it probably depends on your personality and your circumstances, how you might want to use it. You might like to unwind with some bubble bath and listen to some Michael Bublé. That would be torture for me. But there are things I found with Sabbath that I think might apply to many of us. So for me, these are the signs of a bad Sabbath. Sounds like a rock band, doesn't it? Signs of a bad Sabbath. Checking my work email. Ugh. That's a bad thing to do on a Sabbath. Too much of one good thing. For example, if I watch too much TV on a Sabbath, it's not good for me. A little bit, great. Too much, not good. Not getting any exercise. No family time. No time on my own. I'm an introvert. I like a bit of alone time. If I don't get any, I go a bit mental. Not having prepared for it by tidying the house and shopping and stuff like that. Not giving any attention to God. For me, that's a bad Sabbath. If I do all that, it's a bad Sabbath. But the signs of a good Sabbath for me are like this. Fresh air, exercise, family time, alone time, doing some reading, feeling unhurried, a bit of prayer or reading the Bible, maybe watching a good film, maybe I listen to some music or a podcast about something that's unrelated to my job. Maybe I go for a meal with some people that I like spending time with. Can you see the difference? It's not like massively different, but there's a real rhythmic difference for me, particularly, between a Sabbath and not a Sabbath. And it's going to look different for every one of us. But what are the benefits of it? We might say, you know, I'm a high-capacity person. I like working. Why do I need to do this? Well, the writer and minister John Tyson, he had another helpful line that really stayed in my head about the Sabbath. And he says this, in a broken world, we need to fill up on rest and beauty. In a broken world, we need to fill up on rest and beauty. And I love that. And it outworks in a few different ways. Firstly, our physical health. Your body needs a rest. Sabbath is not just complete inactivity, but time to do healthy activity. If your day job means sitting at a desk, you probably don't need the kind of rest that means sitting down all day. You probably don't need that. The Sabbath is an opportunity to give your body whatever it needs. Did you know that the one country in the world today that en masse observes the Sabbath is Israel, unsurprisingly, and mortality rates are lower on the Sabbath than any other day every week of the year? The Sabbath might save your life. The more you Sabbath, you'll be healthier if you do it right. Relational health. Sabbath gives us time to focus and develop life-giving friendships. I'm quite protective over seeing my family on the Sabbath, but I also like seeing some of my friends. But it has to be people that I find to be life-giving, that I enjoy spending time with. You're free to spend time with friends on the Sabbath because you're not busy. Every week you've got time where you can spend with your friends if you do the Sabbath. And probably most importantly, our spiritual health. Sabbath gives us time to focus on God differently. There is something in not working that acknowledges our finiteness. Stopping for a day each week reminds us that God doesn't need us, which is a great relief. It means we have to depend on Him to keep the world turning, and usually it does. It brings us perspective and humility. That's why it is an act of worship to spend a day off each week. It says to God, I know you don't need me. I know I can do this. Now, I'm sure this all sounds good, sounds attractive, doesn't it? Anybody still in doubt that the Sabbath's a good thing? The thing is, I think very few of us Sabbath well. I think very few of us do it well. Why is that? Firstly, real pressures. For some of us, it is genuinely tough to take a Sabbath due to our circumstances. If you're caring for other people, if your job makes it difficult for some reason, that's hard, and we should acknowledge that. If you've got young children, we've got a three-year-old child, it is very hard to rest around childcare in many ways. But maybe it's worth asking for help or considering, are there ways that you can restructure life that would help yourself? For some of us, we use this as an excuse to not rest when actually we could. It's worth thinking about the fact that Jesus is the Savior of the world, and yet He did Sabbath every week. How do we help each other with the Sabbath? Next thing is, for some of us, it's just laziness. For some, we're just lazy, and that's the problem. We have the time, but we use our Sabbath passively. We play too many computer games. We watch two or three films. We dither. We stay up later than we should. We do things that are perfectly good in themselves, but we overdo them so that they stop being restful. And I think we all know what those activities are, but I think that's a temptation for some of us as well. Another problem may be the felt need to be productive. Some of us have a real problem resting. There's something in us that drives us to be productive and accomplish things. And my wife, I have to say, struggles with this. Sorry to embarrass you, darling. And these people tend to be big achievers, so they get a lot of affirmation for all their big achievements. But unrestedness leads to anxiety and burnout. It's a problem. And very often, the need to be productive often comes from the same place as the Pharisees. An inner need to prove ourselves, to perform. We might even trick ourselves into thinking that God likes it when we work that bit more. He doesn't. He doesn't like it. It's actually an affront to God because He wants us to rest and trust Him for our sense of worth. It might also be that we have a fear of stopping. And I think this is related, but I reckon more people than would like to admit it have a fear of stopping. You know in theory that it's great to rest, but when you stop, you're left with your own thoughts. And our culture is built to prevent that from happening. TVs are on all the time. You've got your headphones on when you walk down the street. You look at your phone as soon as you wake up or before you go to sleep. And it's all a distraction to stop us being left alone with our own thoughts, because we're fearful that when we are, our thoughts won't be things that we enjoy. We'll suddenly remember, yeah, I'm lonely, or yeah, I'm fearful, or yeah, I'm uncertain about the future, or I've got regrets. So we fill all the space with activity and noise, and so we don't Sabbath, we don't rest, because actually we're petrified of doing so. I think some of us that's probably true for in this room. And finally, maybe we don't Sabbath because of church life. Christianity is very activist. We're always doing stuff, aren't we? We've always got services and stuff in the week and conferences and training, and sometimes church leaders, sometimes people like me, are unhelpful in that we want people to do more and be more committed and turn up. And that's all good, that's all great stuff, but it should never be at the expense of rest. It won't last in the long term if it's at the expense of rest. The rhythm God sets is 6 days a week of working hard and 1 day a week of resting hard. So the whole Sabbath thing, I think, has the potential to get very personal. It prods some of our deepest values and beliefs and our cultural assumptions. And some of us have an awful lot of growing to do in this. I do believe that. As we close, let's remember, as a church, we're all about glorifying Jesus. That means we follow him, we point to him, we show the world he's great. Let's be clear, Jesus is not glorified by us when we overwork. He's not glorified by us when we overwork. It is far more acceptable in our culture, at least amongst adults, to be somebody that overworks than somebody that underworks, but both of them are absolutely deadly. Both of them are a problem. How can we make the changes in our rhythm so that we live more in light of God's rhythm? What changes do we need to make? I don't have loads of big applications to stick on the screen, apart from this one. Maybe have a think over the course of this next week or two. Where can I change my rhythms so that I really do embrace the gift of the Sabbath that God has given us? Because Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, not only are we commanded to do it, but we're fully free to enjoy it, to get our teeth into it. And God absolutely loves it when we do. It is an act of worship to rest as God intends.